Committee on Environmental and Natural Resources to order here Thursday, January 24th. Welcome, members. Welcome, resort folks from throughout the state of Minnesota here to visit with some young members. Welcome. Senator Carlson, maybe you'd like to introduce the first presenters. We're a little off schedule here, but we're going to be doing some real quick presentation from the Mississippi Headwaters, if you'd like to do a quick introduction and all.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for allowing Mr. Paul Titi, former Representative Paul Titi from Crow Wing County, to present. And Representative Titi is the chair of Crow Wing County Board of Commissioners. And with him, I'll have him introduce his guest.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I am the chairman of the Mississippi Headwaters Board as well, and with me is Brian Napstead, who is on the board from Aiken County, Aiken County Commissioner, also currently the chair of the Board and Water and Soil Resources Board. Also to my left is Jack Frost from the frozen north, Beltrami County, to be here. He is also on our Headwaters Board. Mr. Chairman, if it pleases you, I would like to just play a 5-minute, 30-second video that gives the story of the Headwaters Board. We have been in formation for 30 years now. This is was a response that was to the feds coming in and taking over the Headwaters Board management, and this was formed statutorily for that reason. I think this will give you a rough view of it, and then we can go from there. I'd like to make a few comments and then some questions if you'd like.
Sure. Again, would you identify yourself and please spell your last name for me, please?
My name is Paul Titi, T-H-I-E-D-E, and I am current chairman of the Headwaters Board.
Thank you. Please proceed. I'm sorry, Senator Sachs.
And Mr. Chair, it might be worth noting that the area of the river that we're discussing, the Upper Mississippi Headwaters Board, is represented by four senators on the committee, Senator Scoy, Senator Carlson, myself, and Senator Gazalka.
So. Good. Good to know. Please proceed. Thank you.
Okay. We can technologically do it. I think we just go there, and hopefully you'll...
Everybody see open...
Very hard America's heartland. Very hard Minnesota. That is Minnesota's gift to the world.
Excuse me. Unfortunately, I have this, but why this is not, the sound is not turned up.
It's considered to be one of the most important
members. Come on, help me out. Advanced beyond me. I apologize, Mr. Chairman.
Right,
this was not mine, but we've lost it completely.
This is how it travels to its humble beginnings here, and that descends 1,475 feet downward and over 2,500 miles to the goal.
We've got to get this.
Turn this down.
I'm going to just stop this and go back
and get my all the way over. Hold this bar over the top.
There. Now, hopefully we'll get it right this time.
Go help me.
I apologize.
Anybody under 30 ought to be able to
figure that's it. What I was thinking.
Six. Four.
Sounds good.
Is that better?
Since 1980, the Mississippi Headwaters Board has been
challenged with overseeing the first 400 miles. By way of a state legislative mandate, we are responsible for ensuring the conservation standards of the most important wild and scenic river. We have the structure in place to leverage new funding opportunities. We are positioned to be an extremely effective administrator and facilitator. To access and deploy funds from other organizations, such as explore other financial possibilities, but we're not able to continue facilitation and management of the protection without the necessary operating dollars to even staff the organization. Supplying St. Cloud, Minneapolis, and St. Paul with most of the water, and providing billions of dollars annually in tourism, transportation, and industry, the Mississippi.
I'm gonna try to turn it up for it.
By way of Minnesota State Statute 103F.361-377, our mandate is to constantly administer minimums throughout the first 8 counties of the river in order to protect and enhance the scientific, natural, cultural, historic, and recreational values of our region. With this, our mission from the state legislature is clear. The Headwaters Board has partnered with the Board of Water and Soil Resources, both the U.S. and the Minnesota Forestry Services, MPCA, the DNR, EPA, and Leech Lake Band of Ojibwa, and every other local government entity sitting on the banks of the river. Of course, there are many other partnerships that look at area property and lake associations, Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts, Minnesota Power, the Audubon Society, the Land and Initiative, Foundations, and many more. We've covered a host of programs that while involving scores of local communities, River Watch, Science, Youth Congresses, Canoe Tripping, and countless other educational activities. Overall expenditures of environmental protection cost far more than the funding that we receive. When you have a small investment in the state, environmental work that we've been accomplishing. Protection of this body of water is a true bargain for taxpayers. The real net worth of the work we do is substantially higher than the funding we've had over the years. Mississippi Headwaters Board fully understands the budget deficit and the economic. But within the body of this great state is this heartbeat of economic and cultural providing thousands of jobs and influence. The Mississippi Headwaters Board cannot continue getting clean drinking water for someone, 5 million people, and protect the most influential and beautiful part of this important resource. We ask you to consider of health. Should and can continue our mission of keeping the river in good health. Shoreline erosion control, water treatment monitoring, there is so much more work to be done. And our children, grandchildren, are all counting.
Commissioner, I think we got the gist of it. However, I'm wondering if you have a if you have an opportunity for copies at all, maybe to.
Mr. Chairman, I will quickly enlighten you that we will pass out the YouTube video. It is on YouTube. It is available to all members. And my extreme apologies for not being technologically savvy enough and having enough time to get here so we could set it up ahead of time. But it is on YouTube. I will provide you with that address. And each of you, I certainly encourage you. It is. Wonderful photography and a lot of other information there. Sure, and with your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, I would like to just review about 3-4 minutes here of just some of the facts around this. We do appreciate the fact that we're before the committee and you don't yet have a bill, but we just want to give you some reason why we're here. The original funding for the Mississippi Headwaters Board was $83,000 per year of the biennium. It reached a height of as much as $340,000 per biennium before falling off to about $240,000, and since then has just continued to be lower. At our best, we have leveraged those dollars to in excess of $700,000 worth of projects on the ground. The ensuing cuts have lost us our executive director position. The continued erosion of funds leaves us currently with one part-time staff. We represent an area of generally unimpaired waters that in the past 30 years we have helped to maintain and need to continue to maintain. All of its at its founding, the MHB's statutory duties revolve primarily upon ordinance development and implementation. 30 years later, conservation efforts have evolved to include easement acquisitions, habitat improvement, and grant writing. The MHB, properly staffed, is in a unique position to operate in this new paradigm. With funds to retain a high-caliber executive director, we can continue to do joint projects within the eight counties and coordinate with our SWCDs and watershed districts, enhance individual county water planning, and again, leverage other dollars to our efforts. MHB believes it is our responsibility to wean ourselves from the high reliance on state funding to a higher proportion of self-funding through grants and partnerships facilitated by reinstating that full-time director administrator. And again, we want to acknowledge that the basis of this was to keep the feds out and to let local units of government manage the upper 400 miles of Mississippi. Rather than being a duplicative layer of government, we believe we can be a catalyst to broader participation and allocation of clean water and LaSalle-SAM funds and to coordinate projects of importance to the Mississippi River protection. We are fully fulfilling our statutory obligations, but we could be doing a lot more. The MHB Joint Powers Board political boundaries are a close approximation of the Upper Mississippi Hydrologic Basin, which places us at an advantage if the legislature were to adopt a watershed or basin-level management in the future. We want to make it the case that this statutorily created group of eight counties already exists and is best positioned to leverage dollars and coordinate resources in the Upper Mississippi River Basin. To remain successful and viable, the MHB realizes the need to continue river and habitat protection efforts while promoting recreational opportunities in the headwaters, all of which is necessary to maintain and grow our tourism-based jobs and economies. Tourism is an economic engine that creates jobs and engenders memories and traditions in visitors from all walks of life. Those personal experiences inspire and sustain good stewardship of our precious resources. We ask for your support in this effort, and we would certainly stand for your questions if you have any. And, Mr. Chairman, I will provide access to our website and the YouTube video that we apologize for the quality we were able to present to you today.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to point out to the members of the committee that I have we do have a bill that has not – it's in the revisor's office. It hasn't had the first reading or whatever. It's a freshman. I don't know all the right words to add some funding for this. And I did want to ask Representative Teedy, can you talk about the funding that comes from other sources, maybe the counties?
Each of the eight counties currently does make a contribution each year from the county at the county level. And as I said in my opening remarks, we also do a lot of in-kind, and at the maximum, we leveraged about $700,000 for work there. Again, part of this, the genesis of the MHB was prior to a lot of the zoning ordinance, or as the zoning ordinance were coming forth. Each of the eight counties has done more of their own development of their ordinance. We have developed the Headwaters Board ordinance, and we, again, work with the counties to try and make sure we're all doing it together.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Saxon.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. You know, most years, as these guys know, we had Senator Lessard in here because he loved to tell a story about when he got the call from President Jimmy Carter back in 1976 when there was the management of the Upper Mississippi Headwaters was really under debate, you know, whether this should be done exclusively federally, whether the state should be doing this, and how we should be working it out. And a lot of good work by Senator Lessard, but at some point the president gave him a personal call and he said, you know, Bob, we're going to go along with what you're thinking here. And so I think that it's important that given that responsibility that we don't have to completely fund it, but I think we should adequately fund it so that at least that they can leverage some of those dollars, because they do have a lot of in-kind and there's a lot of potential here for different sources of funding right now. The other thing I was going to say is I mentioned the four senators that are represent those parts of the river that are along the Mississippi Headwaters Board, but I determined that Pappas, Higgins, Miller, and Peterson are all on the Mississippi River, too. We've got a pretty good representation. Yeah, you too.
Senator Kielash.
The only one is Langseth, and his river goes to the Hudson's Bay, so...
And, Mr. Chairman, again, thank you, Senator. And again, we are down to one part-time staff. As the legislature, in its wisdom, has diminished our funds, you know, we, in fact, at times did not even spend the allocation given us simply because there wasn't staff there to do it. We think we are in a position where now we went out and got funds to build this slideshow. We also have redoing our guidebook. We got some private funds to help do that. We had some visioning sessions that were held to really reinvigorate the MHB, and we believe it is a viable operation, and we hope you will continue to support us.
And I think local control is the message here, too, I think, and
absolutely.
Something we've got to be mindful of. So thank you very much.
Senator, I just want to note that Senator Pappas and I served together. That's all, and I was going to say that's how long ago, but it was very short time ago.
A lot of stories being told here. I know Senator Lessard never told any stories. We all know that.
Thank you very much, yeah, Mr. Chairman, for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members.
Thank you.
Assistant Commissioner Meyer, we're going to continue on the DNR presentation, budget presentation.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Hopefully we can get the computer to work.
And Deputy Commissioner, you wanted us to pull out the existing documentation that we had last week, is that right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members, you do have in your packets, hopefully still, we should have some copies available, copy of our PowerPoint presentation. It's entitled Department of Natural, it's on regular paper, two slides per page. We did have a three-hole punch. Yes, that document before you there.
This is the one. Okay, go ahead.
And
pick the council.
We left off after Deputy Commissioner Shad talked about some of the general remarks. See if we can survive. Mr. Chair, I want to talk about our general fund reductions and change items just generally. Then we are going to go into several of our large proposals that we have in the governor's budget, dealing with our hunting and fishing license fee increases, our aquatic invasive species, aquatic invasives funding proposal, and also our enforcement academy. Looking at it, Mr. Chairman, you also have a packet, a letter from the commissioner introducing our budget. It says 2011 Minnesota legislator. This is detailed fact sheets on each of our change item proposals that we have before you today in this presentation. So, for example, the first one entitled General Fund Reduction will cover all of our general fund reductions. And again, it's three-hole punches for you so you can put it right into your budget book. It provides the details that is not in the PowerPoint. And it also has a contact person and phone number and email address on each of these for a person for you to contact for more detailed information. I'm not going to go into that, but this is just reference material for you all for more detailed information.
Assistant Commissioner, if you have trouble with the techno stuff, you've got a couple youngsters behind her that can help you.
Looking for. Hopefully we can get this not to shut off.
I'm going to turn it back on.
So, Mr. Chairman, members, I will work off your paper copy here really quickly. You can see the general fund reduction in the governor's budget for the department. total of $5.916 million. Of that, Mr. Chair, 2.950, or a little bit less than $3 million is proposed to come from the Department of Forestry. We do have several proposals that will make up some of these dollars, and I'll talk about those real quick.
I'm sorry, for clarification, what page are you on here with your presentation?
Six.
Mr. Chairman, let me just grab that. I have different numbers here.
We have page six.
Page six.
Okay, thank you.
May be working off of the paper. But. So on page six, on that first top slide, I have four general fund reduction. Forestry is $2.95 million, Mr. Chair. $1 million of this proposal is a general fund reduction that would be replaced by funds from other divisions within the department. Fish and Wildlife Division, our Division of Parks and Trails, and our Division of Ecological Resources will be paying for the forestry activities that will be done on those lands. For example, when we do a timber harvest on a wildlife management area, for example, those forestry activities related to the cost of putting the timber up will be paid for out of the Game and Fish Fund by the Division of Fish and Wildlife. And that's estimated to be $1 million for those activities. $325,000 of this would be a reduction to our educational activities that we have going on within the Division of Forestry. $125,000 would be a reduction to the Forest Resource Council, a grant that we have with them, and $1.5 million reduction on our private forest stewardship activities. Mr. Chairman, we've been charging for these activities in the past, but they were subsidized by some general fund. This would prepare all of our forest stewardship activities to be a fee-for-service on private forest land.
I'm sorry, Senator Gazelle just got a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Myers, I just want to make sure on this that those changes for the forestry, is that going to impact in any way the sale of timber to the private sector? I just want to make sure that that's an area that we make money for the state. We want to have product available. I just want to make sure I get that that's not going to potentially impact it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, that's a great question. And as we talked about previously on Tuesday, one of our main drivers or our main fundamentals in putting this budget together was not to impact the department's economic engine activities that we do provide, such as in forestry and mining and recreation. So what this is doing, it is a general fund reduction, but it will allow us to maintain the people who put the timber up for sale. It maintains that workforce that we have, and it focuses us more closely to those activities that provide revenue for your constituents, for Senator Saxog, Senator Scoy, Senator Carlson, all the people who have working loggers in your district. We want to make sure that we have a feedstock being put up for market to them so they can get that wood to the mill.
Follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'd stepped out during that time because I heard the very end of it to Senator Carlson, but I thought I needed to make sure.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka. That is very important to us. I have no problem talking about that as much as I can. So,
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, you were just talking about reduced private forest management. Is that when you're talking about how that's changed over the years, does that have anything to do with SFIA and the – And how we used to do the forest plans, and now we've turned that over to forest managers, forest planners?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxog, that is exactly what this will do. Previously, these activities were funded out of the general fund, where our staff would write for a person who owns a 40-acre, 80-acre, people who own private forest land, if they develop a stewardship plan and it was approved by the department, then they're eligible for the Sustainable Forest Incentives Act, which is much like the Green Acres program for agricultural land. With this plan, you're eligible for a lower tax rate on your property and following that plan. Now what we're proposing under this is we won't walk away from those activities, but it will be a complete fee for service rather than previously it was partially subsidized by the general fund.
And so, Mr. Chair, I consider this a real improvement that we've made over the years, that something that we did out of the DNR and knew we had a lot of forest planners around the state of Minnesota, A lot of them retired, and we used that resource, and I think that's been a big improvement, and it's a really improved SFIA. So, congratulations.
Senator, thank you very much. Our budget reflects, it has been over the past several bienniums, we've been looking at activities that have commercial generation or where the general fund has been subsidizing commercial activity or other activities that have other support mechanisms in place and going to a fee-for-service or reducing the general fund associated with those activities. Mr. Chair, the other pieces of this as I go through it, Ecological and Water Resources Division, our proposal is an $855,000 reduction in that division. $505,000 will come from the following places. $215,000 would be a reduction in our pesticide permitted and environmental review activities, reducing our follow-up inspections for compliance with permits and pesticide regulations, and also reducing our early coordination with project developers and review of development projects. We would be making sure that these projects are in compliance and are not having negative impacts, but reducing our activities in the upfront of those processes. $100,000 is from the water permitting and planning activities, which will reduce technical support for water supply planning and permitting. $85,000 is from inventory analysis and monitoring, reducing our capacity to manage information by reducing some of one IT position within the division. $48,000 is for the reduction in our mercury monitoring analysis. We'll be doing these activities when we do fish census activities through the Division of Fish and Wildlife, but it is a reduction in those activities, shifting to non-general fund sources for that. $45,000 reduction from our conservation assistance and regulation programs, and $12,000 reduction in our ecosystem management protection, which is elimination of an aquatic invertebrate analysis for two department projects, Mr. Chairman. If there's no other questions, I'm going to continue on with the general fund reduction piece. A large piece of this, Mr. Chairman, is within the Parks and Trails Division, $949,000. And just as we talked about on Tuesday, the bulk of the general fund within the department is housed in three different divisions: forestry, parks and trails, and ecological resources and waters. That's why you see these reductions taking place in these areas. Parks and trails, again, going back, Mr. Chairman, $949,000. What the impacts of this will be: hours and shortened seasons of operation in some of our parks. What we're talking about in five of the lesser used state park and rec areas, we're going to go back to implementing our shoulder seasons, what we call that. They'll open a little bit later, before Memorial Day, but not earlier than that in most cases. And they'll close probably right after Labor Day for some of the larger services. You'll still be able to get in there and use them, but they won't be fully staffed. We'll be going to a satellite manager system, for example. Some other amenities won't be as they are during the full operational season. Also, a reduction in our hours at our visiting centers and interpretive program and facility maintenance will be reduced somewhat. And routine resource maintenance activities such as burning native prairie and things like that may be extended out 6 months to a year on a case-by-case basis as we need to. Just extending our management activities out a little bit further to provide us with those salary savings. On the grant side of it, Mr. Chairman, we're talking about working with the Red River Mediation Board, reducing some funding there. The proposal is a reduction of $138,000. The Mississippi Headwaters Board that you spoke of, the governor's budget does contain a reduction for them of $53,000, which will impact them, as you just heard. The Leech Lake Band, we do a $5,000 grant with them. The governor's budget would eliminate that. Prairie Wetland Program, a reduction of $60,000 general fund, and a reduction to the Forest Resources grant to the University of Minnesota of $197,000. Operations support, Mr. Chairman, what we're proposing in the budget will be a reduction of general fund of $634,000 from the operations support budget of the department, and going back and utilizing some funding from the other accounts representing the funding portfolio more accurately throughout the division. And we're working with the stakeholders on these issues as well, Mr. Chairman. The proposal would be per year a $58,000 increase from the Water Rec account, $176,000 from snowmobile account, $90,000 from the ATV, $150,000 from the parks, and $160,000 from the forest management investment account, Mr. Chairman. That represents our general fund reduction proposal within the budget. If there are no questions, or I can stand for questions with that, Mr. Chair. Otherwise, we can move into the hunting and fishing piece, if you wish.
Mr. Meyer, would you just give him an idea what percent that represents, the reduction?
The general fund reduction?
Yes.
The 5.9 total is about a 10% reduction, Mr. Chairman, of the general fund for the department.
No other questions? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, with that, I'm going to bring up Director Ed Bogus, and we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about one of our larger proposals within the budget, hunting and fishing license fee increase package. And I am just going to pop in this. Yeah, we have some handouts we can distribute for you, too, Mr. Chairman. Started, Jason.
Whenever you're ready, Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, I'm Ed Bogus, Director of Fish and Wildlife for the Department of Natural Resources, and I'll go ahead and get started through the presentation. This is about our license, fishing and hunting license restructuring and repricing. It's been roughly 10 years since we had a general hunting and fishing fee increase. I wanted to set the stage a little bit. We're looking at this very carefully because hunting and fishing are obviously big business in Minnesota, over $3.6 billion in expenditures for hunting and fishing, with wildlife watching nearly $4.5 billion in expenditures, and fishing and hunting support about 55,000 jobs in the state. So we've taken a little different approach to this fee package than what traditionally has been done. Kind of historically, there were about 6-year intervals between fee hikes for hunting and fishing licenses. It's been 10 years plus since the last fee hike, but the Game and Fish Fund comes from the license revenues and the federal excise taxes, and it really supports the foundation of the work that the Division of Fish and Wildlife and Division of Enforcement and some of our other divisions do that relate to fish and wildlife habitat. So it's these funds that largely pay for the staff work in fish and wildlife that goes on. Looking at where the revenue comes from in the Game and Fish Fund, it's hunting and fishing licenses and stamps, application fees. There are federal excise taxes that are collected on hunting and fishing equipment, ammunition, that are reapportioned back out to the states based on a formula of area and numbers of individuals who are licensed to hunt or fish in those states. So,
Mr. Bogus, if I could stop you for 1 second. Just back up to the fees. You said 10 years ago they were increased. Can you give the group an idea? Was that a gradual increase or was it a one-time increase like you're proposing here?
Mr. Chair, the last fee increase actually was done in two increments for fishing. There was a fishing fee increase that passed in the late 1990s, kind of half of what we were looking for. There was there was a little more controversy around the hunting fee increase because it came on the heels of some deer feeding debates. And so it was a year or two later before the rest of the fishing fee and then the whole hunting fee passed. But it was a large increment at that time. That's been one of the problems and one of the things we found out through some of the market research that we've done is that when you make those large increases in fees, you tend to lose participation temporarily and then it comes back. If you can do it more incrementally, we're told, and more regularly, you don't have that happen. We have some, and you'll see some somewhat larger incremental fees in this package, but we've also developed some lower cost options because we know a lot of people aren't as avid and may be interested in something that may not be for as long during the year, but provides for a more maybe affordable for what their interest is. So good question, Mr. Chair, and we would be interested in some mechanism to have more frequent, less painful increases in some of these fees to keep pace with inflation. The Game and Fish Fund, obviously supporting kind of our foundational fish and wildlife and enforcement staff, is very important that we maintain the health of that fund. And on this graph, the red line is under current projected revenues and expenditures. The black line would be under this proposal that we're discussing right now, where you can see that the fund is declining and is projected to go to zero sometime near the end of fiscal year 2014 or early 2015. If nothing is done on either the expenditure or the revenue side from what current projections are. Over the last number of years, we've had the reason we've been able to go as long as we have without a fee increase is because we've been making some efforts to be more efficient. We're driving less. We're using more fuel-efficient vehicles. We're holding a number of vacancies in both fisheries, wildlife, and also in Division of Enforcement. We've consolidated some of our field stations, and we're looking at more opportunities to do that. We're looking at a variety of efficiencies and operations, but just a couple of examples. The use of technology, we're trying to get more efficient. One good example is some of these tough tablet computers that we're using for collecting fisheries data. We also use them for wildlife surveys, wildlife health. And what it means is instead of writing down data on forms and then re-entering all that data into a computer, we're able to capture it all in one step. And then also we're doing a lot more contracting of work, various types of work that we do for fish and wildlife management. Kind of getting at the problems of inflationary forces, this chart just shows what a individual annual fishing license cost in 1970, $4, what it cost today, and what today's cost, if it had been adjusted by the CPI, what it would have been. So we've been having to use some of those efficiencies just to be able to maintain some of the work that we've been doing. In terms of how we rank with other states, currently for a resident annual fishing license, we're 36th. In the state, and Mr. Meckel, who's up here with me, will talk later about where we would fall if this proposal becomes reality. I don't have the total for the country on deer licenses, but you can see in the upper Midwest we rank in the bottom half of states in terms of deer license fees. And with this, I'm going to turn it over to Jason Meckel, who's been with our fisheries division. And just a little bit more background, we've taken a real kind of business and marketing approach to looking at how we're proposing to structure licenses, what types of opportunities are people seeking, and how do they like to recreate, and what types of things can we do to try to not lose those anglers and hunters that we typically would see dropping off with increased license fees. So we've done quite a bit of work to develop this, and with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Meckel to walk the committee through some of the background that went into the fees, and then we've got the chart of the fees that we can talk about kind of at the end here.
Mr. Meckel, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jason Meckel, Division of Fish and Wildlife. Director Bagas said last June we began some very in-depth discussions with our Citizen Budgetary Oversight Committee and then other stakeholders throughout the summer and fall to figure out what's really important about our license structure and what we do for providing hunting and fishing opportunities in the state. And in those discussions, we've boiled it down to, as we're trying to find solutions to this funding problem, ideally, what do we do? And what we heard from our stakeholders is we need long-term stability to the Game and Fish Fund. These are long-term investments in outdoor opportunities, and we need stability in the fund to do that. One of the things that they've identified in the Budgetary Oversight Committee reports for a number of years is, the imbalance between fishing and wildlife in terms of hunting expenditure, revenues and expenditures. Currently, fishing licenses don't there's not enough revenue from fishing licenses to cover the cost of the programs that we provide in terms of fisheries management and enforcement. And hunting license revenue has enabled us to keep those programs at the level they are. So they've asked us to address that, and you'll see that reflected in the way this proposal is developed, and I'll touch on that again at the end. They also suggested that we ought to look really closely at a customer-friendly structure. One of the things we routinely hear is that it's fairly complex, hunting and fishing licenses. So we took that very seriously, and we have tried to figure out ways to do that. But they also wanted to make sure that licenses had value and that we took into account how we might affect recruitment and retention of people. And I'll talk more specifically about some of the data that we reviewed for that. And finally, one of the other points is the federal excise tax dollars that Director Bagas mentioned. These are federal dollars. We get about $25 million a year back to Minnesota. If we sell fewer licenses, that's less of those dollars that come back to the state. So how we structure licenses and how we price them really does make a difference, both in terms of license revenue, but also in terms of the federal revenue. So we took those factors into consideration. And finally, what they said over and over again to us was make sure that you've got the capacity to manage these opportunities and maintain the high quality of experiences we've worked hard to gain in this state, whether it be hunting or fishing.
Mr. Meckel, if I could just stop you for a second. For the group, when you talk about they, I know you're talking about the Budgetary Oversight Committee. Can you explain that real quickly, how that committee was formed, how long it's been running? I don't need to know any more particulars than that, but they do have an oversight committee that does deal with fees. I think it's important for the new members to understand that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can quickly just give you a little bit of history. The Budget Oversight Committee is a citizen committee. It was established by the legislature in 1994. It consists of a large kind of oversight committee and then several subcommittees for each of the stamps or accounts. We've got duck stamp, pheasant stamp, trout and salmon stamp, some of the deer accounts. And for all of those dedicated accounts, the statutes are very specific on how those dollars can be used, and they also the statutes are very specific about citizens reviewing to make sure that they're comfortable that, in fact, those dollars have been used for their intended purposes. So the Budget Oversight Committee that Mr. Meckel is referring to is volunteer citizens appointed by the commissioner who, for the last, 15 years or so have been reviewing the Game and Fish Fund expenditures. We're also required to do an annual report, which if anyone wants the latest one, we can get you that. An annual report to the legislature on the expenditures out of this fund throughout the department, and the committee reviews that report as well as all the dedicated account expenditures.
Thank
you. Provide a level of oversight and the confidence that the money's going where they want it to go.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just add that we've also been in discussion with the stakeholders to attend the annual roundtable. We've got a number of advisory groups beyond the BOC that we've been sharing, having these discussions with. And so it's even broader than that. One of the things that we have the luxury of is an electronic database that we can learn a lot about who's buying licenses in this state and how often they buy them. One of the things that many people find surprising is that only 27% of our anglers are actually buying a fishing license 5 out of 5 years. And, in fact, 32% are only buying a fishing license 1 out of 5. We don't think we've got a bunch of illegal citizens in this state. What we realize is that hunting and fishing just isn't the same as it used to be. We've become more urban. We've got a lot going on in our lives. There are different lifestyle choices. Hunting and fishing is not as important to Minnesotans or to much of America, frankly, as it historically was. We're still doing quite well with our license sales. We're holding steady. But as a percent of the population, we're not keeping up. So one of the things that we did in this project was to analyze our license sales information to learn more about who our customers are. We frequently interact with the people who buy a license 5 out of 5 years. They're very interested in what we do. We interact much less with people that buy a license 1 out of 5 years. So this project really helped us to shine a light on that. The other thing we did is we brought in some consultants that work nationally on these issues with other states. Responsive Management was one of those firms. And this is just one graph of many. They surveyed over 2,000 Minnesota license buyers and asked them about the desirability of some license options that we thought might be appealing based on what we've seen in other states and what we know about how people hunt and fish in this state. And I'll just point for you that a casual angler in this study was defined as somebody who purchased a license once or twice or 3 years out of five versus a regular angler was somebody who had purchased a license 4 or 5 years out of the last five. And what we see is that the casual anglers show much more interest and desirability in short-term type of options. One of the things that I don't have graphs here to show you is that we also asked these questions with a variety of prices because we wanted to know at what value is this to people? What value is a 3-day license to you? What value is a 90-day license? Those kind of things. And so we've used all that to help formulate this proposal. So in summary, what we've proposed is some structural changes to our licenses. And I would describe those as reduced price youth licenses. So all of the licenses that we offer for youth, they would be half the price of an adult. We've also proposed some lower cost options for casual participants and some convenience packages for those of us that buy a lot and can't get enough of the outdoors. We've priced all of these licenses to the best of our ability on research analysis, price models, elasticity studies based on economics, and survey information that was done on our behalf. And finally, what we came up with was a proposal that funds the conservation delivery that our hunters and anglers expect. So the summary of, and you have on your sheet, and I'll just reference this quickly, all of the licenses that we offer front and back. I've highlighted the proposed changes in yellow, and I'm just going to talk quickly through those. Our biggest selling license is an individual angling and a husband and wife combination. We're going to obviously keep those, and then we've increased the price at a level that the studies suggest is supported.
Excuse me, Mr. Merkel. The changes that you're talking about in yellow, are these new licenses now?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
The proposal is to add a 90-day angling license. $18, that's a new license, not currently available. And this is for residents. Add a 3-day license for residents. One of the unique things about this is that this license would not require you to have a trout stamp to fish trout stream or fish on Lake Superior or fish in trout water. It's a very affordable license for a 3-day fishing adventure for somebody who maybe wants to try it out. And then I've mentioned the youth licenses, so this would be half price. This is a price reduction. Currently 16 to 17-year-olds pay $17, same as an adult. We've also proposed to separate our spearing and angling license. For those of you that don't spear or don't know, when you spear in a dark house for northern pike, you are also required to have an angling license. And under this proposal, we'd separate that. If all you wanted to do was dark house spear, you could spear with a dark house spearing license. You would not be required to have an angling license. If you want to do both, then you would need to have both. The spearing license is priced at $18. It matches basically a 90-day season. That's about the length of a spearing season when the ice season is. We're also proposing to eliminate the conservation license. The conservation license was new a couple of years ago. We have not sold very many of those licenses. They've created some confusion with our anglers. But we think that the 90-day and 3-day options are a much better fit based on the market research that we did. On the non-resident side, we've got a lot of options already for non-residents. What this structure does is it proposes to add a 7-day family option. So for a family coming into Minnesota for a week, husband and wife and kids under 16 could fish for $38. A 16 and 17-year-old would buy a license at the same price as a resident youth. Currently, they're paying $17, same as an adult. Overall price ranges here are $350 to $950. And I want to emphasize, and I know our resort folks behind me will be nodding their heads on this, we had to take a very close look at the non-resident prices. We've seen declines in sales in our non-resident licenses for a number of years. It's a steady decline. What we've seen with other states is when you raise prices, you lose license sales. We don't want to do anything to discourage non-residents from purchasing licenses and coming and spending their money at our resorts, our hospitality industries, and our rural economies. And so we were looking very closely at the price sensitivity of these licenses. The proposal for hunting licenses is simply to add a short-term, small-game hunting opportunity. This would be a 3-day license priced at $19. The individual would not have to buy a pheasant stamp or a waterfowl stamp to hunt those species other than the federal waterfowl stamp. There's no getting around that. But it's an affordable option for a short-term opportunity. And then the convenience package of a small game license. This is really just a small game license, a pheasant stamp, and a duck stamp all in one transaction. Again, our youth licenses at 50% discount and approximately 15% price increases on most of our hunting licenses. We didn't have as far to go on the hunting revenue as we did on fishing revenue. And all the prices that we've looked at are fairly well supported with the research that we did. Our non-resident hunting licenses, the proposal is a 15% price increase, also a 3-day option. We think this will be an opportunity to recruit non-residents to come hunt in Minnesota. We only sell about 20,000 non-resident hunting licenses compared to the 300,000 non-resident hanging licenses. But we are on an uptick. There is some demand. That's a trend going up. It's a positive one, and we think by structuring this license, that will be a positive increase in sales. And again, the small game package for non-residents. The other one is really the convenience package. Is we currently offer a sports license. That's your angling and small game. We'd continue to offer that. And then we've developed a license called the Super Sports. For those of us that fish, hunt small game, and hunt deer, this license will be very attractive. All your stamps and your deer tag and your angling licenses will all be included for a price of $99. And if you choose to, you could get a husband and wife combination on that in which the spouse would also be able to angle. We currently cannot sell hunting licenses as a husband and wife. So when we looked at how we compare to other states, Director Bogus showed this graph earlier. We're currently 36th in our resident angling price. This proposal puts us 19th, smack in the middle.
Excuse me, Mr. Merkel. If I could just have you step back once to the resident husband and wife youth combination license. A very large increase there. I didn't catch your explanation on that one.
The on the resident combination, Mr. Chair, the resident combination license?
That's correct. This one's from $25 to $40.
Yeah, that that license has been heavily discounted. A $17 license today by two individuals purchasing would be $34. We sell it now for $25. We had to generate some revenue. This is a very popular license, and the studies that we did support that this license would continue to sell at a very high rate. At that price.
Okay. Thanks.
So the proposal puts our resident angling license at 19th in the country. Look at the surrounding states. We're currently a little bit lower cost than Wisconsin. Under this proposal, excuse me, we'd move up ahead of Wisconsin, but just below South Dakota, still in the middle for a resident angling license. Our non-resident angling license, we're currently 37th in the nation. This proposal would move right in the middle of the pack, 25th. And really, in wrapping up, the best way that I could summarize what this proposal does is it generates sufficient fishing license revenue to maintain quality of hunting or fishing in this state. Generates sufficient hunting license revenue to maintain the quality of hunting license. Stabilizes the Game and Fish Fund. It addresses the fish and wildlife expenditure balance that was important to stakeholders. provides a customer-friendly structure and value based on market research, maximizes our ability to leverage those federal dollars, and, as I said, gives us the capacity to manage and improve high-quality hunting and angling experiences that we currently enjoy.
Mr. Merkel, I have a question with regards to page 10 there, when we go from 36 to 19th. What's your feeling as far as numbers coming into the state with that increase, sir? I know there was some talk at the roundtable that that was going to increase the folks coming to the state. Is it going to do that, or are we going to? I don't want to use scare people away. That's not a fair thing to say. But are we projecting that we're going to be okay with an increase like that ending up at 25th?
Mr. Chair, based on the analysis that we did, this gives us the best chance to retain the number of licenses that we sell. And, in fact, we think with the 7-day family license that that'll be an attractive license for non-residents. The analysis that we did suggests that there is some fair price sensitivity with our non-resident licenses. And yet, in the past, when we have increased those prices, we haven't seen major drops because of the quality of the product we have in this state. But we think we're going to retain the majority of the non-resident as well as resident, and possibly even increase license sales with some of these other short-term options.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up a little bit on that, we do have a lot of options for non-residents, and we have had a lot of options for non-residents. So what we tend to see is shifting from one option to another when some of these prices change. So it's a little bit difficult to track, but overall the numbers are you know, declining slightly, but maintaining.
Questions from the committee? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I get the reasoning for the 50% increase in the resident angling licenses, about 50%. I think with inflation over a 10-year period, that'd probably be about right. But I'm assuming then that you've done good studies, that we're not over some tipping point where we're going to lose a significant number of people with that big a jump at one time?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelke, the studies that we did, if we had just kept our current structure, projected that, meaning not adding a 90-day license or a 3-day license, the options that we had, suggested that we were at risk of losing a significant number of resident licenses. And what we did was to test out what other kinds of options would give us the best chance of retaining those people who were at risk of dropping out. And so to the best of our ability with the study, the analysis ability that's out there and what we were able to do, this gives us the best chance. And, in fact, in the economic studies that they did, they call them utility scores. And by adding these short-term options, we raise our utility score higher than our current structure does. These options are very desirable to Minnesota anglers, and we think it gives us the best chance of maintaining those sales or even increasing them.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if you could help maybe help me feel a little bit better about the survey and that type of thing that you did. Can you fill us in a little bit on, was it by mail or by computer, and generally, who it went to, or what kind of groups did it actually go to, license holders? And then what kind of participation you got back? Was it, 10%, 15% of the surveys you sent out? Because I sell concrete block, and I try and get a price increase every year, and I go out and talk to my customers, and they always tell me no. In fact, they tell me they can get it from somebody else for less. And so I'm a little concerned, who we were talking to. I realize this type of license is different than selling a retail product, but those are some of the concerns I have about your survey, I guess.
Mr. Merkel.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, the survey was sent out as a mail survey. It was also available for folks who wanted to fill it out online. And then the company that did the work for us made it an option that they could call in and have somebody on the end of the line walk them through the questions. It took about 10 minutes. The survey was designed to select randomly out of the pool of people that buy our licenses, but stratified by how many combination licenses we sell, how many individual licenses we sell, how many non-resident licenses, 24-hour licenses, 7-day non-resident. Every single license type we had was in the pool. It was set up to draw a representative sample from every one of those license sales. We had about a 50% response rate on the survey. There was basically three different surveys because we had three different sets of questions. So we've got very high response rate, and over 2,000 people completed the survey, which, you know, it doesn't seem like a lot when you sell, you know, over a million licenses, but the confidence that you get from that kind of a survey analysis, you know, I mean, you guys know what political polls and how many they query for those, and so 2,000 is actually pretty good numbers.
I would. The only thing I'd add, I've done a lot of surveys myself for various reasons, and I would say 50% participation is a home run. I would say you very rarely get anything over 10 to 15. So I would say, I would say it helps me realize your information's pretty accurate. So,
questions from the committee? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. That is one of our highest profile initiatives we do have within the governor's budget. Also within the governor's budget, we have an invasive species fee increase that I'm going to have Steve Hirsch come up and talk about right now as well. Because that is an issue that is coming at us like lightning speed, and funding is going to be one of the keys that we have to solving that process. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have Steve Hirsch talk about our invasive species management increase. And you can find that information, Mr. Chairman, on page 15 of your handouts.
Mr. Hirsch, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Steve Hirsch, Director of the Division of Ecological and Water Resources for DNR. And as Mr. Meyer said, I will give a brief overview of our change item for aquatic invasive species. I do have a handout here that has a table that has the actual prices that would go into effect under this proposal for the different kinds of boat licenses. So we can hand that out. But just to give a brief background, currently our aquatic invasive species program is funded with general fund, about $1.7 million a year, and then invasive species account dollars to the tune of about $2.1 million a year, and then about $0.8 million in federal funds that we just got this year. And the invasive species account revenues primarily come from a watercraft license surcharge and a surcharge on non-resident fishing licenses. The watercraft license surcharge is currently $5 for all watercraft, and remember that the watercraft license is good for 3 years, so this comes to about $1.66 a year at the current price, and this hasn't changed since 1993. The invasive species account currently has a structural deficit, that is the base appropriation exceeds the annual revenues, and we project that this deficit will cause the fund to go into the red by about $500,000 by fiscal year 2013. And this structural deficit has actually always been there since the account was formed in the first biennium that it was formed, the 2008-2009 biennium. That biennium, we took care of the deficit by just not spending our total authorization. For the current biennium, the deficit was addressed by one-time transfers from the water recreation account, $725,000 for each year of the biennium. As the table that I think you now have or are on the verge of getting shows, the proposed increase for the watercraft license surcharge would be a $5 increase for canoes, kayaks, sailboats, sailboards, rowing shells, and paddle boats. That would be for a $10 total. That doesn't include the issuing fee. A $15 increase for boats under 17 feet for a $20 total. And then a $20 increase for other watercraft for a $25 total. And then also a $3 increase on the non-resident fishing license surcharge for a $5 total. This proposal would both eliminate the structural deficit in the invasive species account, and then it would raise about $3.2 million in revenues for fiscal year 12 and about $4.4 million in revenue thereafter, and would allow additional expenditures out of the invasive species account of about $3.9 million in fiscal year 2012 and then $4 million each year thereafter. So it would basically, with the current aquatic invasive species budget being at about $3.8 million, that's excluding the federal funds, this change item would allow us to a little bit more than double the current budget for aquatic invasive species. And I'll just go over briefly the main outcomes that we would produce from this increase. We would be able to double the current hours of enforcement. Right now we do about 12,800 enforcement hours directed at aquatic invasive species, so this change item will allow us to approximately double that. It would allow us to do more thorough inspections of watercraft, and we would target those inspections in high-risk areas with, like Mille Lacs, for example, that have zebra mussels and a lot of boat traffic. It would allow us to develop some infrastructure for decontamination stations, also targeted at these high-risk areas. It would allow us to increase the grants that we give to local partners for control of invasive aquatic plants. We currently have grants that we're able to give on control for about 50 lakes, and this change item would allow us to add an additional 60 lakes for invasive aquatic plant control, and this is primarily Eurasian water milfoil and curly leaf pondweed. It would allow us to increase our public awareness efforts, both on a statewide basis and at the local level, and then it would also provide for licensing and training of lake service providers, people that install docks and boat lifts for a living.
I want you to slow down for 1 second here for me, if you would. Backing up a little ways here, you made the comment about the amount of dollars that were in the fund last biennium and they weren't spent down, or the account was not reduced to the – not all the funds were spent on aquatics. Did you say that? I'm sorry. If you did, could you explain that for me?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that is correct. For the fiscal year 08-09 biennium, because we had – the way the appropriations came out – our base appropriation was actually greater than the amount of revenue we were taking in. The account was just formed. And so if we wouldn't have done that, the account would have gone into the red before the end of the biennium.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my remarks on the
Senator
change.
Senator Zelka. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a question about using dedicated funds instead of increasing the fees. Is there any reason that you guys would be opposed to dedicated funds for the increase? I'm not talking about supplanting, but I think this problem is severe, and I think that the possibility of some form of dedicated funds could go there as well, and I'm just wondering if you guys have a problem with that direction or if you're open to talking about that direction.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Meyer.
Senator Gazelka, I think I will take that question for Director Hirsch. The different pots of money that we have that the department utilizes on dedicated sources, the Outdoor Heritage Fund, I think, of course, we have no authority to make recommendations over those funds. There's no recommendation of those funds there. Clean Water Fund, the intent there, working with the Clean Water Council and stakeholders, they have not come to that point in time yet. We're working on the TMBL or the maximum daily load process and working with PCA and Bowser on the clean water side of things. There hasn't been any direction to go that way. Obviously, the legislature makes the recommendations on those spending, but in the preparation of the governor's budget looking at those funds, we have not gone down that route. Specifically on the invasive species, our funding proposal targets the vector, so to speak, or how these invasive species are moved around. And it's the boats. It is the what we're looking at is the invasive species surcharge on the boats, because that's the cause of the concern. The question came up this morning in the House about trailers, since it's boats moving around that are trailered, not the boat that sits maybe in one lake all year long. But with the trailers now being a lifetime license, a one-time license, a sticker that goes on the trailer, we really lose that ability to do some type of annual or, in this case, three-year fee. So we thought that this is the most, the highest and best fit for this surcharge to be placed on. It probably doesn't answer your question, but the short question is we haven't looked at the dedicated funds to do that yet.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, from every direction I hear people talking about this, I'm dealing with their LIDs. I forget what that stands for, Lake
Improvement District.
Thank you. And they have liability issues, but they're part of the reason I think they even exist is because they're taking action because maybe at the state level we haven't taken this seriousness enough. And so that I can tell you that's an area that I'm looking for. I'm hoping that we can consider that because I think once we go this direction, if this is the direction we went, then I think it's more difficult to get some of those dedicated funds because then it's supplanting. If I'm wrong, let me know. I'm new to this committee, but it just seems that would be a consistent revenue stream that could be really benefits the whole state.
Senator, if I might, obviously, I'm part of the Lessard one as well as LCCMR, and so is Senator Higgins. But could we ask Mr. Knopf if he could give an opinion on that, because I think he's very familiar with the constitutional language on those dollars, and I know that question's been floating around here a lot. With regards to invasives and other functions. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think I'll register an opinion, but I can just tell you what it says in the Constitution. And it talks about basically both for the Clean Water and for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, you need to protect, restore, or enhance. And so what you would have to determine is that fighting invasive species is protecting waters of the state or protecting aquatic habitat. And so that it basically hinges on whether you consider that protection. I doubt it would be considered restoration or enhancement. It could be, but I think it would be more of a protection issue than the others. But that's the issue. That's what the constitutional language is: protect, restore, or enhance. And it would have to fall into one of those categories for it to be used. And again, it would be for waters of the state, and then for the habitat part, this would be fall under the aquatic habitat.
Sure. Can you also, Mr. Knopf, thank you for that comment on LCCMR dollars with regards to this.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, excuse me, that wasn't me. But,
you're very electrifying.
Yeah, I guess so. Mr. Chairman, I don't think I've ever been called that.
But, yeah.
with regard to LCCMR, they have similar language, although theirs is a little broader. It basically talks about other natural resources, and it talks about for the protection of. It's broader language than it is for the recent legacy amendment. And so it's similar language. It's basically for protection of natural resources that can be used.
That's your question.
Yeah.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I think in the LCCMR bill there is some invasive species money in there, but it's not nearly the amount of money. LCCMR doesn't have nearly the amount of money that the legacy funds do, and so if you put this kind of money into it, you'd kind of blow the whole thing up. It just isn't enough.
Mr. Knopf.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, that's because they've basically been involved in the research for controlling invasive species, but not the on-the-ground programs that we're talking about here. You're right.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Okay.
Yeah, these are the on-the-ground programs. Those are the research programs.
Sure. Yes, you're right, Senator Higgins. There is talk of the Asian carp or silver carp?
Asian carp
as well.
Little green bug, the emerald ash borer.
Little green bug, yeah, that's in there. Yeah, and we've been dealing with that now for already 3 years. So. Mm-hmm. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that, and I think Mr. Knopf just touched on that, but if you're doing research on an existing problem, you would be an enhancement to the water because you're cleaning it up, you know. Now, if you're protecting the water from an invasive coming in, I don't see how that wouldn't be protection because you'd be keeping these things from invading the lakes. And I think from the stuff that the DNR showed earlier, I thought their goal was 10 lakes this year with milfoil and zebra mussels and connecting waters. Well, if you can protect those from being infested, I don't see why that wouldn't fit the protection.
Senator Saxog.
Well, I think that the problem with either one of those dedicated funds is going to be sustainability. I mean, if it's it's like Senator Scoy says, if you've got a piece of research or one thing you can do to take care of a group of lakes, you know, maybe that's okay. But as soon as you get into sustainability of, you know, of funds, I think you really run into some problems. Constitutional.
Senator DeZulka.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think this is a battle that we're going to be dealing with for a while, and I just want to take action sooner than later. Yeah. You know, I feel like, you know, like last year, I don't think they really did what they could have done, and I'd hate to not take action. If we can get a chunk of money, you know, I think legacy funds is a good spot for it.
I think the sustainability is what is certainly an issue, and I think that's what's being addressed as far as the licensing fees. And quite frankly, you know, at least my feeling is the licensing fee should help fight the aquatic. But we need this jump start. I think I'm getting this feeling that we really need to put a lot of real jump start stuff towards the invasives. The question I have, when you talk about decontamination stations, do we have any idea what those cost? And if so, we were to look at doing something like that, would that be put out to bids to the private sector? I think we talked about sometime, Mr. Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, yes, they would be put out to bid for the private sector. The cost, I want to say the cost varies, and I think it can range depending on the type of unit it is, anywhere from like $5,000 at the low end up to $20,000 to $25,000 at the high end. But I'm not entirely sure about that, but I think that's probably pretty close. That would be for a single unit.
Right. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hirsch, so what do they entail? I mean, it isn't just a bucket of water that you'll wash off because you're just taking the boat out of the water, so that's clearly not it. But is it a chemical? Is it something you scrape? Is it, I mean, I frankly just don't know.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Higgins, what they are basically, they're a device that can deliver hot water and high pressure. That's the most common way of doing it. You don't really need to use chemicals. If you've got hot water at some pressure, then you can use that to spray out the inside and the outside of the boats. Now, if there's some of them are designed to be hooked up to power, and some of them are, if there's not power available, can be designed so that they don't need power. Some of them need to, you know, can run off the water source in the lake, and others need to have water, you know, actually in the device themselves. So there's different types.
I understand, too, you have to have a place for the water to be able to run to, not back into the lake. So power has to be one of those issues, electric power with regards to heating, also or generators. So they're very, very intent.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a good point and a good clarification is there's a need to be able to have a good place at an access for these, and many of our accesses, in fact, most of our accesses were not designed to have a structure like this installed. And so we either need to look at retrofitting and redesigning some of our accesses or looking for locations away from the access that are strategically located. So that is a logistical concern.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if the boat just came from the lake and you're using water from the lake, why do you care if it runs back into the lake?
I guess I really don't care, but is there a discussion about was there something included in that high pressure water that can't go back into the lake? I thought I had that was part of the discussions. I didn't. I'm not sure.
Mr. Hirsch should probably answer this, but my understanding is it's the heat. It takes, I think, 4 minutes. I think I heard this somewhere. 4 minutes of hot water to kill the zebra mussel larvae.
Something?
No. Well, maybe Mr. Hirsch
can comment on that, and then we do have to move on.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Scoy, the zebra mussel larvae are very delicate, and so I don't think it would take 4 minutes. The main thing is just to kind of flush them out of the boat. And the issue with water running back in, it isn't just an issue of the actual invasives getting back in the lake. You have to make sure you're not causing erosion. And you know, there can be other things at the landing, you know, spilt oil or whatever that comes off a vehicle. So you don't want to have a design where you're introducing contaminants or siltation back into the lake. So
just one final thing, and we should move on. This fee schedule you're showing us here now of increases was again the last time it was raised in 1993. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that is correct.
Boat licenses?
Yes, 1993 was the last time the watercraft license surcharge was.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, while Mr. Hirsch, Director Hirsch, is here, I'm going to cover several other change items related to the Division of Ecological Resources. I'm going to go backwards on your handout to page 14 rather quickly to talk about this water management account that we're proposing. And this really is just a dedication of funds from our water permitting activities that are deposited in the general fund, the establishment of a water management account. So it's revenue neutral, but we're capturing permit dollars that are charged based on our water activities that go to the general fund. We're putting them in a dedicated account for those purposes. So if there's no other questions with that, we're going to move two slides ahead. And again, I apologize. It's the bottom slide on page 15. We're dealing with our aquatic plant management change item, and I'll have Director Hirsch talk about this one as well.
So, Mr. Chairman, the Aquatic Plant Management Program is a permitting program that allows individual lakeshore owners to control aquatic plants in front of their property in order to be able to get access to open water for recreational access. And the 2008 legislature that directed the DNR to recover the full cost of the administration of this permitting program and the enforcement of this permitting program through our permit fees, and they directed us to adjust those fees by rule in order to recover the cost of that program. And the current annual permit revenues are about, we get about $300,000 a year from those revenues, and the cost of the program for administration of the permits and enforcement, which is in three different divisions, Fish and Wildlife Enforcement and Ecological and Water Resources, is about $1 million. So basically the legislative directive required us to roughly triple the fees for these permits in order to be able to recover the cost of the program. The DNR went through the rulemaking process as directed by the legislative mandate. We had hearings in front of administrative law judge. That administrative law judge recommended approval of the rules, but the previous administration, the previous governor's office, would not approve the rules, and so basically exercised their veto authority under Chapter 14. So, however, the legislative mandate to recover the full cost of the program still exists. So basically this change item would implement those permit fee increases by statute rather than by rule.
Any questions? Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, we have one last change item related to ecological resources and water. I'll just let Steve talk about that really quick as well.
Mr. Chairman, this would be a request for an increase out of the water recreation account of $500,000 a year, and this would be primarily to provide funding for hydrologic work related to water level control structures, both protecting lake levels and then stream level gauges as well, and also to provide some technical support for local units of government on land use issues. We've seen a lot of the hydrological support that we've been able to provide in our program erode over the years because of general fund cuts. We currently maintain a network of about 1,000 lake gauges and 180 stream flow gauges. This provides a lot of valuable information for recreation, for water quality and water quantity monitoring, and then also actually for flood prediction as well. And so we would like to bolster some of this capacity that's been lost over the last decade through an increased appropriation out of the water recreation account.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This may be a place where you would like to stop for the day. Otherwise, we could go over the enforcement change items, which may take us about 10 minutes or so.
Maybe we should do that. We're going to have the MPCA come in Tuesday and Thursday. They're saying they're needing about a day and a half. So would that half a day on Tuesday, would you be able to finish that up?
Mr. Chair, we should be able to finish up within half a day on Tuesday. The big pieces that we had, we've covered so far. I think we're right on schedule with talking about the hunting and fishing license fee increases, the invasive species, and some of those other things. So we could certainly pick up the enforcement on Tuesday if that's your desire.
Let's do that. If that's everybody's getting the nod here. So with that, thank you very much. And that'll do it for today.
Whoa. There you go.